Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello and welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. I'm stoked that you're here. Thank you so much for just putting me in your ears or on the speaker or whatever else that is, wherever you are. I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here and that we can just talk about habits and behavioral change and what are the characteristics that are going to lead to long-term weight loss success. I've been noticing recently some key characteristics. I kind of wanted to call this podcast episode like personality types as a little bit of a clickbait to what are the personality types or what are these things that innately help people to be successful. Things like dedication and willpower and focus. The awesome thing is that none of that is actually true. There's no amazing personality type. There is no specific innate qualities that you need to have. It's not about how fast your metabolism is or whether you can stay focused or whether you have a lot of willpower. What really matters are habits and behaviors that you do have control of that we can all cultivate and get better at. And these are things that we've been able to observe over the past year or so that the program that I run, Lean of Plants, has changed and evolved into a coaching one-on-one program. So prior to about 6 months ago, most of what we did was DIY, work through material yourself, and then an accountability element through meeting in small groups, which is incredibly effective. We changed that to be much more focused on one-on-one accountability, on working with someone who could help you to actually keep that person accountable, help that person to know what areas to focus on. And part of that change was because I've started to really, really appreciate and see the power of having experts in your corner and having accountability. I don't think anyone is immune from how beneficial it is to have accountability. And so that's part of the reason for that change. That's the background. I'm not here to plug it. As you know, I keep this podcast ad-free. You're just going to hear me here. But I wanted to tell you that because we've been able to observe in a way that we haven't before through one-on-one conversations, through hours and hours of amazing Zoom meetings with our clients. We've talked to about, I think it's about 15 or 16 of our one-on-one clients this week, and just learning and getting more and more data on what are the successful character traits of people. And the reason that I'm so passionate about this and I wanted to share it with you today is that it's an amazing insight that I feel incredibly privileged to be able to have. And there's so many things that we've been able to observe that are almost counter to what would be expected. And I don't think these things are talked about very often. I think we get very bogged down in the mechanics of weight loss, things like staying in a calorie deficit, what macros you should use, whether you're on a keto or a carnivore diet or a paleo diet or a vegan diet. And obviously a keto diet, carnivore diet, paleo diet, please don't do them. They're not good for you. They're not healthy. Not a good time. But it's been fascinating to see, hey, there are things, there are beliefs, there are patterns, there are mindsets, and there are behavioral things things, I wish I had a better word than things, that people do, and they consistently are correlated and cause phenomenal results. And I got thinking about this because there's this very prevalent idea that dieting does not work. And I would tend to agree with that. But it's at the point where, statistically speaking, the amount of people that will lose weight and actually genuinely keep that off long term is so flipping low that there are people out there that will say dieting never works. It just does not work. It does not have enough statistical data to say that it is effective. That's the reality that we're living in. That most dieting, most weight loss is short term, and it is not something that lasts a lifetime. And while that is very sobering, it is not cause for alarm if you understand these key principles and you actively practice them until they become habits and second nature. And there's about 12 key characteristics that have really stood out to myself and my team over the past 6 months that we've been looking into this more deeply, that we're now going, hey, if someone has these character traits, no matter how long it takes, no matter how many ups and downs they have, they over the long term will be successful. I almost feel now, and it's weird because I'm like, I don't want to come off conceited. I don't want to come off as some kind of guru in saying this. Like it literally is just following the data. And I love how Brené Brown, if you're a Brené Brown fan, then awesome. But she talks a lot about being data driven and just what would emerge from the research as she was researching shame and vulnerability. And it was so counter to everything that she'd believed about those topics. And that's kind of how I feel now. It's almost like having this bird's eye view and being like a this is where the conceited part comes in. I feel like I'm almost like a talent scout. And I can go in and have a conversation with someone. I'm like, that person's going to be successful. That person's going to struggle. And like I said, the coolest part about this is that we all have the ability to change. We all have the ability to cultivate these things. Enough of an introduction. I just wanted to share why this is so important. Let's get into what these 12 things are. The first one is something I've talked about often, and that is being a victor as opposed to a victim. A victim mindset is very responsible. A victor is someone who takes initiative. They are someone that takes responsibility for their circumstances, and they take responsibility for being the only one that can save themselves. A victor is not someone who makes excuses. They are not there waiting to be saved by a hero, waiting for circumstances to go their way. They are someone who is in the battle. They are prepared to fight, and they are not going to give up on what they want. They see it is their opportunity, their responsibility, their initiative, their hard work, their sweat, their tears, all of those kind of things are going to bring the result, and that nothing is going to get in the way of that. If you want to hear more about this, definitely go and listen to the Mantras and Mindsets podcast episode that I did, talking more about this particular mindset. But essentially what that is taking really, really radical responsibility and saying, I am here because of the decisions that I have made. I am going to get out of the situation I am because of decisions within my power and within my control. That you do not give ownership of your circumstances to someone else, no matter how valid that is. So whether you live with a spouse who does not support you at all, whether you've grown up eating box mac and cheese and just driving through Taco Bell, whether you deal with a ton of emotional turmoil and ADHD, or you have a really busy lifestyle, or you have multiple kids and you don't have a lot of money to invest in whatever. No matter what, you go, I am going to make choices, I'm going to make sacrifices, and I am going to make this happen. A victor will never say, well, They may say. I'm sure I've said this at times. I identify as a victor 100%. I am the hero of my story, even when I don't believe it. I say that to myself because that's a choice that I make. But a victor is not going to say, oh, well, you know, it's really, really hard for me. I just don't think I can do this because my kids just, they won't let me change. My teenagers are just going to, they're going to throw their hands in the air. They're going to be so, so angry with me if I change the way we eat. I just can't. Kind of the words that you'll hear victims say is a lot of can'ts. They'll say a lot of it's hard. They'll say a lot of, they'll talk about things outside of their control, like hormones, environment, emotions. Yeah, they're not really in your control most of the time. Other people, history, circumstances, all of those kind of things, rather than taking ownership. So key characteristics here or key things to be aware of and thinking about is that if you want to cultivate a victim mindset, you have to look at every single thing that's happening and go, how can I have influence over this? How can I take ownership over that? And even if it genuinely is not your thing to take ownership of, for example, you can't help possibly that there are a million takeaway places or drive-throughs in your area. You cannot, it's you, for some people listening, maybe you live in a food desert, maybe you have people in your house that consistently bring home pizza and chocolate and cake. The victor goes, hey, I can change this situation and I'm going to do everything in my power to do that. Whether that's driving a different route to work, having a really difficult conversation with your mother-in-law, telling your kids no, denying yourself, not bringing food into your house, whatever it is, the victor says, I will take radical responsibility, and they get creative by looking at ways that they can do that. So that's the first thing. The second thing I've observed is optimism. And there's this razor that I find really interesting, and that's the optimist or the optimism razor. And a razor is just two ways of looking at things, two kind of scenarios. And the optimist razor is to get around people who are optimistic, because optimists see open doors. Pessimists see closed doors. Optimists will knock down the closed doors if they are closed, because they see possibilities. And when things do come up, when obstacles do come in the way, they will go, well, it's kind of like being that hero again. They have hope, or they take action towards that not being something that is going to derail them long term. They celebrate wins and progress. And I gotta say, like, I get really concerned when I talk to women who never give themselves any credit. When we talk about their wins and we celebrate what's going on, they will say, oh, well, you know, it's not that good and I could have done better. And I get that. I feel the same as well. I'm very hard on myself. It's very easy to do. But what I've realized is that we tend to see being hard on ourselves and being high achievers and being people that hold ourselves to incredibly high standards and disregard the progress that we've made because it's too little and it's too small, that the people that do that consistently find it more difficult to see long-term results because they get demotivated faster. They're not seeing as much progress because they're not acknowledging as much progress, and then they're less motivated to actually continue because they don't feel good about where they've come from. They're constantly looking at how far they have to go instead of celebrating the progress that they've made. And the amazing thing about being someone who chooses, again, radical responsibility, being the victor, not the victim, makes that choice that even if it's not in your nature to do that, that you will start to cultivate that behavior even when you don't feel it. And this is not just shouting affirmations to yourself in the mirror. It's taking consistent action that then proves to yourself that you are capable of that, documenting that process. What I've started doing, which I find helpful, is just writing on post-it notes. Every time I move something forward, whether it's small or not, when I hop into bed, if I'm feeling low, if I'm feeling like, hey, like I didn't move anything forward, I didn't make any progress, I'm getting out my journal and I'm writing, this is what I made progress on. I'm looking for ways to actively combat the negative self-talk that I have by reminding myself of what I'm capable of. And that allows me to think, hey, I can overcome obstacles as they happen because I've seen that I can do that many times before. I've got this almost culmination of pieces. I've got this arsenal that when I need it, I can pull from because I go, hey, I did this, I did that, I accomplished this, I moved this forward, I've made progress. It becomes the proof that then propels you forward. And the other thing about being optimistic or being someone who celebrates your wins is that this is the most motivating factor for humans. We could all do with more motivation. Like, amen. Hands in the air, yes. If you want more motivation, then from a behavioral science standpoint, the most evidence-based practice that you can cultivate is acknowledging your own progress and then having other people acknowledge that as well. So sharing those wins publicly. This is why we do this inside of Lean of Plants. If you are part of our program, part of our Lean of Plants fam, this is why we do it. This is why we have a culture of celebrating wins and acknowledging progress because we know that it works. It works. So do it. Don't give yourself excuses. Start doing see this as super imperative that if you don't have this right now, if this is not the practice for you, to work on it. Make a conscious effort to decide what are those actions that are going to help me to actually start to shift my mindset and my behavior around that. And if you do shift your behavior, if you start writing on post-it notes, if you start journaling, if you start affirming the progress that you've made, sharing that when it feels icky and conceited and it feels like you shouldn't be tooting your own horn, then your feelings and your thoughts are going to follow the action. They always do. So this leads to the third thing, which is being data-driven, not emotionally driven. This is really, really hard for most of us that have, or any of us that are super emotional. I'm definitely someone who is quite an emotional person. I have very high and then very low emotions, like almost constantly, and it's extremely exhausting. And what I've had to realize is that this is almost like being on a wave or being on a pump track. I got into skating after I lost probably about half of the weight that I wanted to, and I never felt that I'll be able to skate. Like it is such a blessing now. It is something I'm so incredibly grateful for, that I think, man, like my life has changed so flipping much just by losing weight. That's a side note, but one of the things that has been really, really cool to learn over the past year or so is being able to skate on what's called a pump track. And essentially, it's just going on this kind of concrete track that's up and down, and it goes around corners, and it can be very, very scary on a skateboard. Like, I get fully kitted up. I've got a helmet, I've got knee pads, shin pads, wrist guards, all the things. And I look like such a dork, and I'm like, I'm repping it because I do not want to get hurt here. It's too much admin when you're in your 30s or older. You're like, nah, I'm not up for that anymore. But anyway, in terms of emotions, we get on these peaks and we get in these troughs, and we've got to ride that. We've got to bend our knees, which is what you do when you're surfing or you're skating, and you've got to absorb those shocks. You've got to ride the wave and recognize that if you are rigid in that, if you do not allow yourself to ride it, then you're going to find that very, very difficult. And when I talk about riding the wave, what I'm meaning is that the emotions are going to come and go. They are going to derail you if you let them be something that propels you as opposed to just absorbing them. And this is all about recognizing that emotions are something that happen to us. They are something that act upon us, and we are distinct from them. It's that whole thing of I think, therefore I am. We are not our thoughts. We are not our emotions. We are not our actions. We are distinct from them. And therefore, when they come at us, thick and fast and running us over like a freight train, we get to go, hey, this is true. This is real. This is data. This is reality. Yes, that feeling is strong, but it doesn't change reality. It just changes how I feel about it. And a really prime example of this is looking at things like the scale weight. And it's really only been in the last 6 months or so that I've been reminded of how influential seeing some random number on the scales is for most women. Because we have so much of a history of seeing that number and allowing our emotions, rather than just the data that exists, that it is literally just the sum of your fat, your muscles, your brain, your organs, your poop, the water in you, all of these other things, the clothes that you're wearing, that it's meaningless in terms of your worth. But we let the emotion and the association with something so arbitrary affect our entire days. And for some people, this has been things that they have struggled with and had derail and affect them so negatively for many, many years. And I'm not saying that as a criticism, because I felt exactly the same way. But the problem here is that we're operating out of a visceral, emotional response that has got nothing to do with reality. If you hop on the scales and the weight has gone up, and now you're a pound or two heavier because you've simply got more salt in your system, or you've simply had more food than you normally would, or there's simply the fact that you have a uterus, or you don't, whatever, and your body just acts in a way that you cannot fathom all the time, because that is our human bodies. Like, they're random somewhat. They're kind of weird. They do things that we don't always understand. And then that's reality. Like, that is the truth. Day to day, your weight can fluctuate so much. So if we then go, hey, I'm going to disregard reality. I'm going to disregard that this is literally just an indication of the sum of my weight right now. It is not an indication that I've gained 2 pounds of fat in a night or a few days, because that is physically impossible. If we allow ourselves to use that, or use that as an excuse where we ride our emotions and we let our emotions dictate us in the face of hard, raw data, then I'm sorry, but like, I'm going to be real blunt on this. Like, I think it's a cop-out. And I think we've allowed ourselves to do that. I don't think that it's something that is willful necessarily, or I don't think that it's intentional. Let me say that. But if you're listening to this and you do have the opportunity to go, hey, well, there's reality, there's data, there's objective truth that is not dependent on how I feel about it, then I can make a choice in those moments when I feel worst, when I feel most triggered, to actually move in the direction of positivity, to move in the direction where my behavior reflects the real, true, accurate data, not just how I feel about it, because that is not accurate. It's certainly not accurate 100% of the time. It is incredibly subjective. And another example of this is that, and here's why it's so subjective, is because person A hops on the scales, their weight fluctuates over and over and over and over again, and they don't care. It means nothing to them because they're focused on actions. They're focused on habits. They're looking at trends over time. They're seeing that over months, that weight is going down. And they're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. My weight went up, right? Person B hops on and their weight went up, even though it was down the day before, and then they go and they have a huge binge because of that. Like, the actual data is exactly the same. The actual reality is totally the same. There's just a different response to it. And so that's why it's really important that we understand that emotions and the way that we interpret things most of the time is very subjective. And the people who are more successful are much more focused on real data. And when I say that, the real data that we look at in terms of what we, as in myself and my team, have observed will 100% lead to success is people that eat 1 to 2 pounds of veggies every single day consistently. People who are focused on progress instead of trying to get things perfect. People who eat whole foods. People who eat a ton of potatoes. People who avoid or limit processed food. People who are much more focused on their day-to-day actions and creating habits than just the weight on the scales. Because when you focus on those leading actions, the behavior, irrespective of how you feel in the moment, then guess what? The weight and the results follow as well. So being data-driven is a huge quality, and it's something that we can all cultivate. And this is something that a lot of people will say about being in a business as well, or being an athlete, or being literally anything to do with making progress, is being data rather than emotionally driven, so that you can actually use the information that you have in a positive way that informs your decisions, that is empowered as opposed to just your emotions. The fourth thing is to see things how they are, not how they should be. And I've done a whole podcast episode on stop shoulding on yourself. With my accent, people hear something very different when I say shoulding. S-H-O-U-L-D-I-N-G. Shoulding. It's not a real word, but shoulding is where we go, I should be better. I should be different. Things should be easier. My weight should be moving faster. I should have gotten here quicker. Should is this kind of magical, mythical idea that is different to reality. It's not real. It's this made up idea of what things could be like, or what we want them to be like. And then we go, well, because there's a gap between where I think things should be and where I actually am, or what's actually happening, there's an issue. There's a problem. And then instead of allowing ourselves to take the data, because should is always looking at things that are outside of our control. Because if something should be different, then we're not taking ownership for actually changing it. Because why would we actually have to change it if it just should be different, right? And so when things should be different, we've got a gap between our expectation, and it almost always leads to disappointment. We're disappointed that we're not doing enough, things aren't fast enough, we're not making progress quick enough, and there's this gap between expectation and where we want, or where we actually are, reality, that always feels lagging. And there's this thing in business, or I don't know if it's business, but it's this idea that reality is kind of this line. And then above and below reality, you've got disappointment if things don't live up to what you thought they would be. And then if things exceed what you thought they would be, you get surprise and delight. So both sides of those coins are really just where our expectations are and what we think is going to happen. So one of the best things that you can do, and that the things and the characteristics that we've seen are so incredibly effective, is when people let go of the expectations of how things should be. And they work amazingly with what they've got, rather than the way that they should be. It's the way that things are. And then this allows us to go, hey, this is the reality. This is the data. I'm going to creatively problem solve so that I can make progress. I'm not going to get caught up in this mythical world where I'm disappointed because of something that was never true, or never a reality, or never, or something way in the past, or something in the future. And instead, I'm going to work with what I have right now, because that is the only thing within my control. And where this has come into play so much on a personal level for me is with my husband's diagnosis, and the fact that he has primary progressive multiple sclerosis, which has led to him being full-time in a wheelchair, and a whole host of other symptoms that are associated with that progressive diagnosis. And we've been married for more than 9 years now, and it's been a process of me having to get to a point, and both of us having to get to a point, where we let go of what life should look like for us, letting go of what other people have and what other people take for granted, like being able to walk out the front door, like being able to not feel scared or daunted when you see steps, or wondering how that is going to just affect every little area of your life. Just literally every area of our lives is affected by this. And letting go of this idea that this reality or this existence in this other universe where things are different, that's not true. That's not accurate. That's not real. There's no point comparing with the mythology of that, because it's not real. This is real. This is what we have. This is where we are. It shouldn't be any different. It just is the way that it is. And I'm not saying that that doesn't suck, but I'm saying that you go, I'm going to work with what I have in order to do the best with what I've got, so that I can feel gratefulness, so that I can make progress, so that my life doesn't feel meaningless and constantly disappointing for me, and so that I can actually creatively problem solve on how to move past those obstacles as opposed to wallowing in self-pity. And so where this plays out on weight loss on a very practical level is where you should be seeing weight loss faster. Really common one, like I touched on. No, the weight loss that you see, the results that you see, are directly correlated to reality. They are correlated to the calories that you consume. They are correlated to your movement. They shouldn't be anything too different to what they actually are. They just are what they are. If you want to change it, you're going to have to eat less calories than what you burn. Or you're going to have to widen that gap between your calorie output and your calorie input. Like, that's fact. That's data. That's reality. There's no shoulds about it. If you are 50 and someone else is 30 and you should be able to lose weight, or you're looking back, when I was 30, I lost weight so easily. I should be able to lose weight that easily now. No, you just are the way that you are. Things are the way that they are right now. Ask yourself, well, what can I do right now with what I have? If I could eliminate one word from people's vocabularies that would help them make more progress, it would be should. Like, I'm not even kidding. Should is so detrimental to people's success. Instead, saying, here's what I'm going to do. And the other way that should comes in is saying, I should be better, or I should have done more, rather than going, hey, this is what happened. I did eat the cookie. I did have the binge. This is why. This is what I'm going to do about it. Because when you say, oh, like, I shouldn't have done that, how does that help? Like, what next? It's like, okay, great. You shouldn't have done that. So what? Move on. What are you actually going to do? Like, should helps nothing. It helps nothing. I remember having counseling one time. This is years and years ago. And this is kind of where I first got introduced to this concept. And I was just saying, I was like, I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have done a podcast. I should have blah, this content. And I should have done that, blah, 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 blah. And I should have. And she's like, what if you just instead were like, this is just what things are. This is just the way things are. And you stop saying should. Should you have done a podcast? Like, it's a decision. It is what it is. Well, here I am doing a podcast. Woohoo, go me. Yay. Anyway, please stop shooting on yourself. All right. The fifth one with this is do not compare. And comparison is one of those things that gets us shooting on ourselves more than anything else, because we look at what other people are doing and we go, well, if they can see this, if they've had it like this, well, I, because that would be fair, well, that would be just, I should be able to see exactly the same, or I should be able to have the same benefits or the same weight loss or the same success or anything else. And then we stop focusing on what actually makes us progress, and we start going, well, it's harder for me, it's more difficult, and then I can't. And then what do you do with that information? What practical action steps, what practical application to progress is there when you compare? Nothing. Comparison is so unhelpful because it's so distracting. That's the biggest thing. So successful people that we've seen is they stop comparing either where they were in the past, what worked in the past, or with other people, or a fantasy. That's the shoulds. The comparison with what you'd like to be happening is the shoulds. It's all fairyland. When you stop comparing, you go, well, I'm going to work with what I have and I'm going to take action on what's possible. It's exceptionally proactive. So stop comparing. The sixth thing is bounce back rate. This is all about failing fast and not letting failure be a big deal. Failure is part of success. The person who succeeds phenomenally, the person who sees more success than anyone else has failed more. Let that sink in. I'm going to say it again. The person who is seeing more success, I'm allowing you to compare. No, you can compare in this instance. The person who is much, much more successful than you in anything that you want to achieve has failed many, many, many more times than you have. How many times have I mucked up in this podcast episode alone? How many times have I said and like and put out episodes that have not been amazing? How many times have I looked back and been like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that? I've failed more at this podcast than most people ever will. And for that reason, not because of anything amazing to do with me, but literally just because I've allowed myself to fail more. Now, 150 podcast episodes in, I had to go and check that. It's actually not 150. It's 120. But we're getting there. So this will be 121. But I'm somewhat okay at this because I've failed more than I ever did before. And when we start to see that failure is an ingredient to success, and I tell my kids this all the time, I'm so passionate about this because there's so much data around it that I will actually praise my kids for failure. Like, my kids like fall off the playground. I'm not like, oh, poor thing. I'm like, nice job, fail, good fail. No, I'm kidding. I do care for them if they hurt themselves. I'm there, all right? I'm not a horrible, terrible mother. Not all the time, at least. But I praise their failure because I want them to grow up thinking that failure is normal and that what matters is effort. What matters is action, and that is part of the process. So I'm trying to minimize the negative consequences of failure so that they do it more. Because if you try more, if you practice more, then you will succeed more. And the people who are very successful, they're always failing more than anyone else. They've just learned to see that. One of the key things here is bouncing back fast. But we find it easier to bounce back fast when we don't see failure as such a big deal. Whereas the people that allow themselves to become very emotionally invested in their own failure, where they see that as the end of the world, which again is not being data driven, that's an emotional decision to be like, oh, I ate that sleeve of Oreos, now I'm entitled to go and have a binge. Like, that decision making is not in line with what we know about behavior change. It is not in line with what we know about anything to do with reality. Again, it's somewhat of a cop out where we've just, I don't even know if cop out's the right word. It's more just a habit. It's really just a habit where it's the easiest path because it's the path of least resistance. And I believe part of being a responsible adult is being someone who is not solely driven by emotions, because I've got kids, I've got two girls, and at this moment, my youngest is very emotionally driven to the point where if someone doesn't want to play with her, if the order in which her breakfast gets assembled is slightly wrong, then she can really throw up a stink about it. And I have to remind her, I'm like, this is, like, you can feel this way. Like, it's fine. Like, you can feel angry. You can feel upset. But allowing that to affect your day, allowing that to ruin what you're about and in your experience, like, that's a choice. That's a choice that you're making, and you can choose differently. So I'm coming back to that emotions ones a lot because I think it's big. But bounce back rate is really just not letting those negative associations and negative thought process around failure be an excuse for not getting back on track. I'm becoming increasingly convinced that the faster someone bounces back from failure, their bounce back rate is a bigger indicator of success than whether they never fail. Because perfection, if we're always perfect until we're not, we're scared of failure. If we're used to failing a lot and then used to getting up really quickly, then we're not scared of it because it's not a big deal anymore. It's kind of learning and normalizing it. So bounce back fast, appreciate failure, and see that as part of the journey. That's what successful people do. I've got about 6 more points, and I'm actually thinking that because of the length of this podcast, I might break this into 2 parts, just because I really want to do justice to these other things as well. And so just to wrap up and kind of go over what we've talked about, the biggest bottleneck here is to be a victor and not a victim, because everything hinges on us taking radical responsibility. And as soon as we pawn that off onto someone else or a circumstance or the past or something outside of our control, we remove our ability to do anything about it. We have to wait for someone else to save us or something to change in our circumstances. And 9 times out of 10, those things don't change without our input. If anything, they get worse. This is making a choice not to be a passive participator in your life, no matter how sucky things get. They do suck at times. I know that firsthand. But making a choice that you're not going to just sit back and take it. My girls have started listening a lot to, or they love this movie, the new Matilda movie. I'm a huge Roald Dahl fan. I think Roald Dahl's amazing. But the new Matilda movie on Netflix is pretty good, actually. It's a musical. And she sings this song where she's basically saying, like, I'm going to, like, fight for what I want. I'm not going to just take it. Like, I think there's a line in there. It's like, if you think that life's not fair, doesn't mean you have to, like, grin and bear it. Doesn't mean that you have to, like, take it on the chin and wear it. And I love that. I love that so much, that it's like, yeah, things can be difficult. You can rise above that. And the other thing with this that I just want to point out is that the people we admire most, the people who have the most character, the people that have the most interesting stories that we look up to, the heroes that we think are amazing, the idols that we have in our lives. When I say idols, like American Idol, not like a little statue of something. Okay? All right. Just wanted to put that out there. Those people always have an amazing story of overcoming obstacles. And another thing that, just with this, that I've realized is that this phase of us changing our habits, changing our behavior, and going on this journey where you go from the person that would default towards cake and sadness and being a victim, when that person starts to vote and stack piece by piece the fact that they are changing, that they bounce back fast, that they work on the way that things are, that they look at the data that they've got and they make decisions to move forward based on that. They celebrate the wins and the progress that they're making. That process is not fast. It's not instantaneous. There's no mindset shift that can suddenly change everything. No matter how, like, phenomenal this podcast is, if it is, whatever, right? Some people think it is. It's all right. I'll give you that. It's not too bad. But no matter that, we still have to put in the time. We still have to do the actions that are going to lead to us believing that change. And I asked this the other day in a live call we did in the Lean of Plants group. And I said, please put your hands up if you think that right now you have the habits, the behavior, and the mindsets and the practice that if I could wave a magic wand and get you to your goal weight, you'd actually maintain that. And on that live, there wasn't actually anyone that put up their hands. I put up two hands because I'm there now because I've done my time. I've done this over the past 3 or 4 years. And so I'm now convinced I can maintain that because I've got enough data behind me. So this process right here, this messy kind of middle of, it's not fun. It's messy. There's change. There's sacrifice. There's all of these things. It's that hero's journey that we're on. As uncomfortable that is the necessary training ground. That is the boot camp to the rest of our lives. So we need to appreciate the journey, appreciate the process, even if we hate it, recognize that it is a necessary part of actually getting to that goal. And so if we can cultivate these kind of mindsets, these kind of habits, these kind of character traits, then we will, when those things become second nature, most likely have gotten to that goal. And then you've got the character traits that are actually going to maintain it. And that's the most important thing. Because as I said to someone today, weight loss is a very short period of time. If you do it right, if you have the support, if you have the systems, if you know what to do and you get consistent through behavioral change, it's short comparatively. Maintenance is a weight loss phase that is the rest of your life. So we better be pretty darn prepared to do that well. And this is the time. So if you can take one thing away from this podcast, it's like no matter how hard it is right now, no matter how much change you need to see in your weight, in your habits, in your behavior to bridge that gap to where you want to be, you can get there with these things, but going through that process is going to prepare you to stay there. And that's something kind of cool. That's like worth celebrating to me. I'm going to leave this here, but I just wanted to say that if you are wanting more personal help on losing weight in a proven way, because the data is there to say, hey, you're not a failure because this is hard. You're not a failure because you struggle with consistency. If you want to actually learn these behavioral change tools, if you want accountability, if you feel like being in a community that supports and normalizes behavior would be helpful for you, then please hop on a free weight loss goal setting consult with myself and my team so we can talk to you about how to make that a reality. We'd love to help you do that, and we've helped hundreds of other women do the same, and I can say that with so much confidence now because I've seen it time and time again, day in, day out inside of our community, and change is possible. I've been able to lose 40 pounds with these habits and with these frameworks. Hundreds of other women have been able to do the same. This works. If you have not experienced that yet, it is just because you either do not have those tools or it just hasn't been long enough. You haven't put enough practice in, so it will be coming. All right, that's it for today, and I'll do part two of this next week on the other episode. If you liked it, please consider giving me a rating on the podcast app, the Apple podcast app. It really, really helps to get this podcast out just into the earbuds of people that really need the encouragement. It changes lives. So I'd really appreciate it if you did that. And I don't have any ads on here, as you know, and I really want to keep this like an ad-free space. So that just helps me out. So please consider giving that a review if you like the podcast. All right, this really is goodbye, and I'll see you next week for another episode. Bye.